For the beginning, I would like to ask you, what are the dimensions of the protests which can we see right now in New York and in other cities throughout the United States? Are there any newness in the movement?
Well, the protests, I think, are a new movement, and it's grown remarkably. I've been going down to the Wall Street protests since the first day on September 17th. And that week, it was relatively small. There were only about 1 to 100 people sleeping out at night. You had a lot more people during the day, but there weren't that many people sleeping out at night, and it seemed small. What was also interesting to me was that there were relatively few New Yorkers, even though this was a protest in New York right near Wall Street. There, most of the people were from around the country or even out of the country. I talked to people from Portland, Oregon, from California, from Texas, from states on the East Coast, but there were a few people that I actually recognized. And that started to change dramatically after the first weekend. That was on September 24th. Police attacked a protest march that came from the occupation site at the Liberty Plaza, and that's where there was the infamous video of the police pepper spraying the young women on the sidewalk. And so the next week you had a lot more people show up, and you had a lot more media show up, and it's just grown since then. And then again the following weekend there were the 700 arrests on the bridge, on the Brooklyn Bridge. And so, again, that led to a huge growth. And at this point, what's really remarkable is it's bringing out all sorts of people, all sorts of social classes, all sorts of ages. You're finally starting to get some good racial diversity. And now we've seen it grow up, basically explode across the country. There's something like over 100 ongoing occupations all across the U.S., and something like 1,200 more are planned. And this is a movement that is really confronting the extreme concentration of wealth and power in U.S. society, that essentially the upper 1% control the majority of the wealth and almost all the political and social power in this country. And so people... there is a clear opposition. People do want to overturn this order. Like you often hear the media saying they don't have any demands. What are their demands? Or, you know, there are too many demands. Now that's actually starting to change because everybody recognizes, again, it's this extreme concentration of wealth and power. But it's true there isn't any one demand because there isn't any one problem. You know, the power that Wall Street has over our economy and over our political system means that, you know, people are losing their housing. They don't have jobs. They don't have health care. They can't get student loans, or they come out of college with huge debts. A lot of environmental problems like global warming, the food crisis around the world, the fact that the two political parties are bought and paid for by the corporations and the wealthy. So there are all these problems that come out of an economic and political system that is controlled by Wall Street. So there are all these various demands. There are all these possible solutions. And it's taken the mainstream media about a month to wise up to that, even though a lot of them are still very snide and still try to dismiss these protests. But the fact of the matter is the Occupy Wall Street movement and all the other occupations have made the concentration of wealth and power a national issue. It can't be denied anymore. And the rich are shaking in their boots, and the political class is on the defensive. And this is really, it's just amazing to see how in 1 month that you've seen this kind of transformation of the political dialogue and people's imaginations of what people think is possible.
About how many people we are talking about are in the streets during the day in New York?
It can vary widely. You know, I went to the General Assembly on Saturday. They had it at a different park called Washington Square Park. It's near New York University, which is actually essentially a giant corporation, not really a university. They had over 5,000 people there in the General Assembly. It was rather amazing. A few days earlier, there was a large march of labor and students. There were well over 25,000 people. And now at Liberty Plaza or Zuccotti Park during the day, you have many thousands of people there who pass through during the day. Usually there are 2,000 or 3,000 people there at any one time. So it really is grown just tremendously, and people really support it. That's the thing. There was one poll that reportedly showed 75% of New Yorkers supported the occupation. So, you know, you do have a lot of support and a lot of people in the streets. But a lot of people, I think, are still sitting on the sidelines, and that's important to remember, that they're not really, they haven't taken the step yet of directly getting engaged in the protests.
Okay, can you talk a little about differences between other protests which has happened before in the United States and this one, Occupy Wall Street movement?
I think the closest parallel to the Occupy Wall Street would be the anti-globalization movement. Certainly a lot of the issues are the same, you know, that it's about corporate control and corporate power. The kind of the organizing form is somewhat similar. There is an important difference in during the alter-globalization movement, you had a different kind of structure of organizing. It was also horizontal, but people were coming into the movement already organized into what they called affinity groups, and so they would use a spokes council model, because people in the affinity groups, the idea is these are people who you trust, who you've done political work with, so you can appoint a trusted representative to I participate in the decision-making body, the spokes council. Now, with the occupations, and I think this is also similar to what has happened in Spain and other countries, they use the General Assembly because people are coming there unorganized. And so everyone participates in the General Assembly. And I think there's some remarkable things going on in terms of how the way the General Assembly operates gives people a feeling that they have, you know, some sort of voice, that they have some sort of power, both individually and collectively. But it is also a very slow and cumbersome decision-making process. And I think, you know, if this movement is going to be effective beyond kind of the symbolic and performative, then it needs to start creating some forms of organizations. You can't have this kind of disorganized mass. And I should say, what I mean by performative is that all protest is theater. The problem is most protest is bad theater. And we've seen that plenty of times in the past, especially with the anti-war movement in recent years, where people would hold these huge marches, hundreds of thousands of people, but they would just kind of march around on a weekend when no one's around on this pre-approved route, and then they would listen, you know, there'd be a rally and some chanting, and they'd go home. And it didn't really accomplish anything. It didn't really make people feel like they were changing anything. So even though the Occupy Wall Street movement hasn't been attracting the same crowds as, say, the anti-Iraq war movement, it's had a much more profound effect in terms of being able to intervene in the political system and being able to help transform people's consciousness.
What about government, local or the state government? Does they try to obstruct protests or discredit it somehow?
Well, yes. I mean, in New York City, Mayor Bloomberg has tried to discredit the protests. You know, you have at the national level politicians calling them mobs. The aggressive police response, the violence, and the huge number of arrests, I think, were attempts to scare people away. I think, you know, that was somewhat effective. I've talked to people who aren't going down there because they say, I don't want to get arrested. But they also failed because after these police attacks, you found many more people coming out there. And the thing is, the city, if it wanted, could clear this park in probably like 15 minutes. The New York Police Department is a standing army. It has 36,000 police officers. So they could easily, they're used to these massive demonstrations, so they can easily clear the park. But there's so much support, so much ideological support, and even now political support, that they're not able to. And I think this is, you know, something people need to understand and recognize, how social power is wielded. And just because the state can do something, it can be stopped when there's a lot of public opposition to it, or a lot of public support for a movement.
What about media coverage? It was quite bad at the beginning. What about now? Has it improved? Or
I think it has improved moderately. You know, it's still not that great. You know, but you are starting to see a lot of the media are being more sympathetic. At first, they were very dismissive. The New York Times, of all publications, came out with an editorial supportive of the occupation, and some of their reporters who were dismissive are now, they kind of flipped and wrote pieces that are more in support. But I still think you find a lot of the broadcast media, like Fox News and CNN, and certainly the right-wing media, are very aggressive in their opposition to it, and are really trying to deliberately paint it in a bad light. But it is also very hard to oppose, because the concentration of wealth and power in this society is so extreme, and it's so obviously at the root of so many of our society's problems, that to oppose it, you either sound completely out of touch with reality, or you end up supporting this tiny elite. You look like you're just basically the puppets of the powerful. So I think that's why a lot of the media have started to shift. You know, if they had done a better job of covering the crisis, of covering the problems, of saying that we need more, that if we're going to have an economic recovery, we need to have more social spending, and that austerity cuts are the stupidest idea in the world. If the media had been doing some decent reporting, I think you wouldn't see, you wouldn't have seen such a huge movement literally spring up out of the ground.